It's good to be with you this morning. Good to have my father-in-law, Cheryl, with us. I think I'd rather listen to him today than me speak. I think he'd probably get up and do it today. He seems like he's doing really well, so we're glad to have him this morning. I want to be looking with you in the book of Exodus this morning, Exodus chapter 8, if you turn over there. You know, the Old Testament scriptures contain many different things that are very useful for us as we've been studying in our Sunday morning class. We've been doing an Old Testament survey, and there's lots of things in the Old Testament that are very applicable to us today. One of the things that we see certainly in the Old Testament is the example of Moses, and Moses is a very prominent figure in the Old Testament. And he is a type of Christ. He's presented as one who is like Christ. In Acts chapter 3, verses 22 and 23, it says that Moses said, "The Lord will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brothers. You shall listen to him in whatever he tells you. And it shall be that every soul who does not listen to that prophet shall be destroyed from the people." Of course, this is talking about Christ, and Christ is the one that is being referenced here, that was a type of Moses. Moses was the deliverer of his people, and Christ was also a deliverer of his people. So there's things that we see in the New Testament that reference back to the Old Testament. And another example of that, I believe, is in the example of Pharaoh. And Moses' dealings with Pharaoh and how Pharaoh refused to let the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. And there's four different times when Moses goes to Pharaoh and tries to get Pharaoh to let the people go. And Pharaoh offers different proposals to get these to let the people go. And of course, each one of those times, Moses refuses to accept Pharaoh's compromises. And so we want to look at that this morning. Just a little background is we know that Moses was commissioned to free Israel, and you know, when God first came to Moses, this was not something that Moses wanted to do, and Moses had to be, you know, talked into to doing that. It was very evident that Moses did not want to do the job, and God was not going to take no for an answer. In Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 7, it says that the Lord said, "I have surely seen the afflictions of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard of their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians and to bring them out of the land, bring them out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And behold, now the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" And of course, it didn't really matter who Moses was. It really mattered who God was. So Moses here was just considering the human aspect of his inferiority, but really he needed to consider that God was the one that had the power to do that. And too often people are guilty of the same thing. They leave God out of their plans, and they're only considering themselves, and they're not considering God. But God's promise to Moses to free Israel out of Egypt was a very certain plan, one that was going to take place and one that was not going to be thwarted by any man. But God did tell Moses that Pharaoh was not going to be cooperative. God mentioned to Moses, you know, Pharaoh is not going to like this, and there's going to be a number of things that are going to have to be done for this to take place. If you skip to verse 19 of Exodus chapter 3, "But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand." And of course, he's talking about his own mighty hand that would be the one that would be doing the compelling. But it was a plan that was going to take place. So verse 20 says, "I will stretch out my hand. I will strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. And after that, he will let you go." And those of you that are familiar with the account know that the 10 plagues took place. And it was at the cessation of these 10 plagues that Pharaoh did indeed let the people go. So it would take these 10 plagues and the loss of Pharaoh's son to finally allow Israel to be able to escape. But it's in the context of these 10 plagues that we see these different times that Pharaoh said, well, you know, I'm going to let the people go if you'll do this. And I'm kind of going to let them go if you'll do it this way. So there's compromises that Pharaoh mentions. So let's look at those as we go throughout our study this morning. First of all, the first compromise or the first proposal that Pharaoh offers is found in Exodus chapter 8 and verse 25. Exodus chapter 8, verse 25. Of course, Moses is wanting to take the people of Israel out of Egypt. And Pharaoh says, well, you know, you don't really need to leave. You know, you've got a God that you want to serve. You can serve Him right here. Verse 25, then Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God within the land. And so what had happened here is that we had the plague of turning the water into blood. We had the plague of the frogs, the plague of the lice, and the flies. And it's after these plagues that this first proposal is offered. You know, you can go and you can worship God here in our land. And of course, Pharaoh, if you're talking about, you know, Christ, you know, and Moses being a type of Christ, I think you could kind of say that Pharaoh is a type of the devil. Because, you know, he's offering something that's really less than what is sufficient. Pharaoh is going to keep offering compromises here to Moses and to the people of God. And what we're told about Satan is that he's a liar and he can't be trusted. And you can see in the way that Pharaoh interacts and the way that Pharaoh responds to things, he's really a liar and he can't be trusted either. He doesn't keep his word. And so when he offers something, can he really be trusted? But he's saying, Israel, you can offer your sacrifices right here in the land. Well, what do we know about that land? Well, the land is under Pharaoh's control, of course. It's under his control. And to have done so is not what would be pleasing to God. Let's look at Exodus chapter 8 and verse 26. Exodus chapter 8, verse 26. But Moses said, it would be not right to do so, for the offerings we shall sacrifice to the Lord are an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice offerings abominable to the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not stone us? I think this is an often overlooked issue here that Moses pointed out. You know, what you're telling us to do is not legal. It's not something that is accepted in the land. We're going to be offering a sacrifice to our God, and that's not going to be accepted by the people. When they see that, that's not what is accepted here, and we will be stoned. So Israel could not offer the needed sacrifices, as Moses points out, because that lands under the control of Pharaoh, under those laws, and it would have incurred, Moses said, a death penalty by the hands of the Egyptians. So Israel could not please Egypt and God at the same time, is what's being taught. And of course, we see that same type of principle in the New Testament when Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, no man can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And so what Pharaoh is offering is really not something that was legitimate. And if he had really thought about what it was that he was proposing, it just doesn't make sense. You're telling him to do something that's not going to be accepted in the land. And of course, the devil today would like us to do the same thing, to make compromises, to relinquish some control, but keep man in his jurisdiction. And the New Testament is very explicit in terms of not compromising with evil. But you see, throughout the world today, I know especially we notice it in our country today, that many people compromise with the world. They compromise with the devil. And they may have a little bit of religion in their life, but when it comes to something being proposed like this, they would be all about doing that because it would be very convenient. but it is something that is explicitly forbidden in the New Testament and certainly should not be something that we would be fooled if we were offered this type of compromise. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 10 and 11. Ephesians 5, 10 and 11. Try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. And really, that's what Moses did here when he heard of Pharaoh's plan. He exposed why that plan would not work. And in the world today, we see a lot of religious systems that are offered, you could say, by the devil because they allow some religion, but not really enough to control your life. It's based on compromise, and it is it's basically the same appeal that Pharaoh had to Moses. In verse 27, you see Moses' reply to this compromise. He says, "We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as He shall command us." We're not going to take this command. So, what Satan, or I should have said Pharaoh, but we're comparing the two, aren't we? What Pharaoh said now in verse 28 of chapter 8, okay, well, you can do that, but I want you to go far away. And so Pharaoh attempted to position himself and control Israel. Maybe they would kind of think they were free, but they're really not, because they're still going to be within my reach. And sometimes we want control. The parents want to have control over their children, and rightly so. If the kids are going somewhere, where are you going? What time are you going to be back? Who are you going to be with? And, one thing that kind of strikes fear in the heart of a parent is if some, like when Ethan went to Colorado this summer, he was going to be in areas where there'd be no cell phone coverage. And I know that's kind of a unique thing to our time. When we were growing up, if you were gone somewhere, there was no way to contact you. But now we feel like we have to be in touch all the time. And if somebody's without a cell signal, that just, causes all kinds of distress. And one thing about the FC camp that we're going to this summer, it's in an area of Alabama where the cell phone coverage is very weak. And that's been something that's been talked about. A lot of us that are counselors and workers there, even though we're on vacation, our office still wants to call us about things. And this is going to be a situation where when Randy is on vacation, he's really going to be on vacation because you're not going to be able to have a whole lot of contact with me. That's something that I have to deal with my work. But here, Pharaoh, you can go away, just a little bit, but you're not going to go outside of my coverage. I'm still going to be able to keep tabs on you. So he attempts to position himself and control Israel, to give them a little bit of freedom, but they're still within my grasp. And so he offers to grant them partial release. But serving God is really an all or nothing proposition, or it should be. But a lot of times people don't live it that way. They straddle the fence and they can't make up their mind who they're going to serve. And really, when people are not 100% behind serving God, they have made their choice, whether they realize it or not. We are commanded to love God totally with all of our heart. And Paul said that he counted all things loss for Christ. He was totally dedicated to the cause of Christ. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 27. Matthew chapter 22, verse 37, rather. Verse 34. When the Pharisees had heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." And really, we've done many talks about this particular verse, and it's been well noted that if you put that into effect, if you love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, everything else falls into place. And certainly that's why Jesus said this is the first and great commandment. Because if you do this one, all the other commandments you're automatically going to do because you are 100% in with Jesus Christ and with serving God. But Pharaoh's not going to have it that way. You can go, but only not very far away. And I'll say this, that some people that profess to be Christians have just enough of Christianity to make themselves totally miserable because they haven't really chosen which side it is that they want to be on. When my dad was living in Dothan, there was a man there that was typical of this type of situation, that he had enough religion in his life to make him miserable. And fortunately, at one time in his life, he realized that he was not doing what he should, and he needed to make himself tied totally with God. But what he was doing is he would be going out with his friends at restaurants and things. And Dothan is not really a large town, and people there know each other. And the church there is pretty big. And so he was concerned that when he was going out to eat with his friends that somebody from church might come in and see him drinking beer. But he wasn't concerned enough about it to stop drinking. But he was concerned enough about it that he would place his drink on the floor next to his chair. So keeping his drink right in front of him, he would try to scooch it over on the table so it looked like it was somebody else's drink, or he would set it on the floor. And, you know, when I think about that, I think, well, that just has to be miserable if you're so paranoid that somebody's going to see that. He can't enjoy the world enough, you know, to just go ahead and drink and enjoy it, and he can't enjoy being a Christian enough because he's wanting to be part of the world. So he's not happy in either place. And it just doesn't make sense. But when his family, one person in his family became ill, he realized that the people that were paying attention to him, the people that were coming to visit, the people that were helping them were all Christians. And all these buddies that he went out and drank with, they were nowhere to be found. And he realized, you know, I'm with the wrong kind of people. And I need to choose who I'm going to serve. But I just say that to say he's not a unique case. And it's not that there's a lot of people that are setting their drinks on the ground, but there are a lot of people out there that have just enough religion to make themselves totally miserable. One of the shows that we have been watching on television lately has been The Middle, and maybe some of you have seen that show. And there is the middle girl, Sue, in one of the episodes that we just watched. She was told by her father not to go out and watch an R-rated movie. Explicitly told not to do that. And so she decides that she's going to do that. And this is very untypical of this character because she never does anything wrong. And when she does, you know, the guilt just comes over her. And this was certainly an example of that in the aftermath. But she dresses up in clothes that are supposed to make her look mature. And she goes up to the box office, and she's trying to cover up the fact that she has braces. And she's talking with an English accent like that's going to make her seem older. But she buys the tickets to go into this R-rated movie. And her father finds the receipt in her in his wife's clothes because she had borrowed her mom's, you know, jacket to go out because the jacket looked old too. And there's the receipt for this R-rated movie. And he said, you know, she defied me. I'm going to go talk to her about that. And as soon as he walks in, she just falls apart. She falls to pieces because she's already so ridden with guilt. She said it was the worst thing that she ever did. And you know, she was so upset that they were in there that she threw up in her popcorn in the movie, and she couldn't even enjoy being in the movie. So the father was going in there to try to punish her, but she had already punished herself. And that is an example of one that if you consider the life of a Christian, that should be the reaction that a Christian would have when they go out and they are disobedient to God, that they are ridden with guilt. And they can't be happy until they fix that. But there are lots of people that would have been so happy to have made it past the gatekeeper at the movie and that they were able to go and see the movie that they shouldn't have been going to see. You know, she was underage and shouldn't have been let in there anyway. There are those that will walk the line and try to straddle the fence, and will do that year after year after year. They have just enough religion to make them unhappy, and it doesn't take. And so they remain really within easy reach of the devil, because they're not refusing him. They're not telling him no. And Pharaoh here, when he says, well, you can go, but not very far away, you know, that would have been great for Pharaoh. But Moses says, no, that's not going to be the solution. Moses steadfastly refused to compromise. And that's the way that we need to react to that kind of attempt for compromise as well. The next compromise that Pharaoh tried was, oh, you that are men, but not your little ones, you can go. Let's look at Exodus chapter 10. Exodus chapter 10, verses 8 through 11. So Moses and Aaron were brought back to Pharaoh, and he said to them, go serve the Lord your God. But which ones are to go? So Pharaoh's asking this question as if he didn't know. You can go, but you know, who is it that needs to go? Moses said, we will go with our young and our old. We will go with our sons and daughters and with our flocks and herds, for we must hold a feast to the Lord. But he said to them, the Lord be with you if ever I let you and your little ones go. Look, you have some evil purpose in mind. No, go, the men among you, and serve the Lord. For that is what you are asking. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. So Pharaoh's proposal number 3 involved only releasing the men. He said, well, you've got some kind of scheme, so I'm not going to let you all go, but I want your women and children to stay behind. And so, you know, at this time, there had been more plagues that had occurred. So each time that Pharaoh makes another compromise, it's because Pharaoh is getting more and more distressed about the things that are going on in his land. So he's trying to loosen, you know, little bit by little bit, and make these problems go away. These plagues that have occurred now are the boils and the hail and the death of the cattle. So, you know, 7 in all have taken place as far as the plagues go. So Pharaoh tries to convince Moses and Aaron that the children were not important to the worship of God. Is there anything that applies to us today when we think about this compromise? Yeah, the devil has convinced many that children are not that important. I mean, it's true that many times children are given a special place in a religious organization, but that place usually is relegated to some kind of child care or some kind of entertainment where they're not really getting Bible teaching. And you know, a lot of times that's the situation with young people. You know, they're being taken care of and they're being entertained. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4 says, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Many religious bodies today, they provide the babysitting, they provide the, quote, children's church for the young people, but they exclude them from the real worship of God. So Pharaoh knows that if these women and children can be excluded, and he's still going to have control over these people. You know, the men certainly are not going to forget about their wives and their children. And so this is going to result in the families being divided, and it's not going to be a situation that Moses is going to let Pharaoh have his way in this regard. Also, number 4, Pharaoh says, let your flocks and herds be stayed. And so we've already heard what Moses said to Pharaoh on the last occasion, that we're all going to go, the men and women are going to go, and the flocks and the herds are going to go also, because we need those to offer sacrifice or feast to the Lord. But now Pharaoh says, well, yeah, I'll let you go, but you have to do this. Verse 24, then Pharaoh called Moses and said, go serve the Lord, but your little ones may go with you. Only let your flocks and your herds remain behind. You know, I've heard some people say that they look at this and they say, well, you know, this might be one that Moses could have dealt with. This is one that Moses really could have compromised, because, you know, this is just talking about material possessions. Why couldn't Moses have just left his material possessions behind and then go out and serve the Lord and leave those belongings behind? So there's two more of the 10 plagues that have taken place. We also have the locusts and the darkness that have happened at this time. So is it plausible for Moses to accept this and to let the people go, but leave the flocks and the herds behind? Well, think about this. There would have been some serious negative consequences if Moses had accepted this offer. Leaving their belongings behind in Egypt would have resulted in a situation where they were looking back. Leaving their belongings in Egypt would have caused them to look back. And of course, Jesus reminds us of one who looked back in Luke chapter 17, verse 32. One of my favorite memory verses was, remember Lot's wife. Why remember her? Well, you know, she looked back. They were told not to, and she did. In Luke chapter 9, verse 62, Jesus said, no man putting his hand into the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. I read one time about a young man who had been told by his father he was going down to a lake, he was going fishing, and the son wanted to go in the water, but there was lots of bacteria and things in the water. He said, you don't need to go swimming in that lake. I do not want you to go swimming in that lake when you go fishing. And he gets down there, and his father can see him from the distance, and the young man takes his shorts off, and he's got his bathing suit on underneath it. And the father calls him and says, why do you have on your bathing suit? He said, well, I wore it just in case I got tempted. Now, he had planned in advance what he was going to do. He'd already been told what he was not supposed to do. And he's decided, well, I might get tempted, so I'm going to do this. If he was truly loyal and obedient to his father, he would not have given any occasion to sin, would he? And sometimes people are that way when it comes to their life as a Christian. You know, we read in the New Testament about those that were converted to Christ, those that practiced witchcraft. They went out and they burned their books. Why? Well, that shows that they were committed to what they were taking on. We're not going to be involved in this anymore. Some people might say, well, those, you know how expensive books are? You know what the process is to make books in these days? We don't have printing presses. These are very expensive. And, you know, I better keep this just in case I want to go back to witchcraft. I better keep these things from my sinful past. If somebody is truly dedicated to the cause of Christ, they will not keep their swimsuit on just in case they want to go swimming, and they won't keep all the remnants of their sinful past, you know, whether it be books, dirty books, or whatever it might be, or that, you know, let's say it's somebody that had a drinking problem and they're not going to drink anymore. Well, I'm going to leave all these drinks in the refrigerator just in case I'm tempted. Well, what's going to happen? They're just setting themselves up for failure. You know, that's why, you know, when people go on a diet, there's one of two things that they do. They either throw out all the bad food, or they eat it all so they won't have it anymore so they can start their diet the next day. But they have to get rid of all that bad food if they're dedicated to what it is that they're doing. So, the devil is just like Pharaoh, and he is always willing to compromise, and he's always able to make his offer seem appealing and fair. I can get as close to sin as possible without sinning. And people will make those kind of judgments. It's okay for me to go here, there. It's okay for me to be around these people and these worldly influences because I'm not going to be drawn into that, but I can't really give up these friends. Well, why can't you give them up? In the case of the flocks, Israel needed these animals in their worship. And if Pharaoh succeeds in talking them into leaving behind their flock, he's really defeating that part of their worship. And today, when Satan is successful at making people compromise and holding on to things from the past, holding on to things that are sinful and not totally releasing those things, it is a compromise that will keep someone from faithfully serving God. But through all of the compromises that are offered here, Moses stood firm on every one of them. As Moses said, we will go with our young, with our old, with our sons, with our daughters, with our flocks, with our herds. We will go, for we must hold a feast to the Lord. Moses was standing up in the face of compromise. But there are many who fall when they are faced with the same type of situation. And we have to be careful. There should not be any compromise with the devil. Every time this happens, when people give in to compromise, it ends badly. But the good news is that in the face of compromise, Moses and the children of Israel didn't compromise, and Israel was freed. The Egyptian army was defeated. And so it led to them being liberated from Egypt. Of course, we know all the things that happened after that they were not always as faithful as they needed to be. But the fact is that they had a deliverer. The deliverer stood up in the face of temptation, and he was able to deliver them. And Jesus Christ did the same thing for us. Satan tried to get him to compromise. And Jesus stood up in the face of temptation and compromise and didn't compromise. And he was able to deliver us, just as Moses delivered the children of Israel out of Egypt. And applying that to us, we will be faced with compromise throughout our life. And unfortunately, today you can see many, many signs of carnage from those who have compromised. Worship has changed in many congregations and churches. Morality, standards of morality have certainly made a big change here in this country. But the fact is all these things started with compromise. And it's deadly. It leads to spiritual death. If we're going to be liberated from the bondage of sin, we have to not give in to compromise. And so looking at Pharaoh's compromises and how Moses stood up against those is very useful for us today. And I hope that you'll remember that when you are faced with compromise and will be like Moses and not give in to that. If we can help you in any way, be obedient to the gospel of Christ. The gospel of Christ requires us not to live a life of compromise, but to totally give ourselves unto the Lord, obeying His will, agreeing to be buried in baptism and arising to walk in new life, and then living a life of allegiance to God. If we can help you in any way, be obedient to the gospel. We invite you to come while we stand together and sing.